I had two trips recently to Ukraine, and the reason why I went there, I have family there. My son, his wife, and my grandchildren live there. And the thing was that I was about to become a grandmother again, and I wanted to take my grandson here, so he would visit us here and spend some time here. And of course, the reason for that was also because I was kind of scared and afraid of what was going on in Ukraine. And I actually wanted to take all my family, but they decided not to go because my daughter-in-law was about to deliver a baby. So we decided that I would help them in such a way that I will take my grandson here. And they would concentrate and focus on kind of having this other child.
So are you trying to get them all to move to the States?
Well, I wanted them to at least have kind of a short vacation from what was going on, because all things that are going on now actually started in the late fall of last year. And my children and my friends, actually everybody I know in Ukraine and in Kyiv, were a part of this protest, which was against this criminal power that we had at that time in Ukraine. And they went through a lot, and they could have, my son could have been killed actually during some of those protests, as some people were. But they still decided to stay there and kind of work on bringing the country together. My son is also a teacher in the university. So he needed to stay there and kind of continue teaching.
Would you describe your son and your daughter-in-law as activists?
Activists kind of has a little bit heavy load on that, and probably I wouldn't describe my daughter-in-law this way. And probably activists would be like front team of people who would be there. To some degree, I can probably describe my son as an activist, but not a formal activist, maybe. It's just the case was that people would go to those protests every day, and people who lived in Kyiv actually did kind of a strange, I would say funny type of protest. He would go teach his students to the university, and after he's done, he would go to Maidan, which is a main square where the protest was held, and he would stay there the rest of the day and night and go only late at night or early in the morning back home, and then go back to his work. And many people actually did that, the same thing. So, sorry. And the same thing did, as I said, all my friends, those who I studied with in the university when I was a student, and people who live in the same building where I used to live, they all actually showed support. And I assume there could have been somebody who would be on the side of that criminal president, but I frankly doubted, because I personally did not see these people.
Did you grow up in or around Kyiv yourself?
Yes, I was born in Kyiv. I was born in Kyiv.
You were telling me before we started recording that Kyiv, of course, is not where a lot of the protesting is going, not where a lot of the fighting is going on. What is the sense of the people who are in the capital about what's going on the border region with Russia? What are they feeling about the conflict, because it is not necessarily on their doorstep?
Well, I must say that the protest itself started in Kyiv in the late November of 2013. So all of these main events before Yanukovych, former President Yanukovych, ran away from Ukraine were actually taking place in Kyiv. And many people from other places, from Western Ukraine, from Eastern Ukraine, as well as from Donbas, where now we have some kind of problems, they all came to Kyiv to show their support of this protest and that they want some changes in Ukraine. And that they look for Ukraine to become free of corruption and things like that. However, after this, I may call it revolution, probably revolution won, Russia kept doing something preventing Ukraine of getting away from its influence and becoming less corrupt or free of corruption or more oriented to the Western Europe country. So one thing they did, and it started in February, they invaded Crimea. When the situation was, we didn't even have a president at that time because that criminal president just ran away into Russia. And later, what they did, they started invading into eastern parts of Ukraine. And in many cases, what we see there, it's... Well, I probably should start slightly different. Russia, actually, as we understand now, started this plan of retaining, making Ukraine just a part of Russia, actually several years ago. We just didn't realize that that was going on and how they were influencing elections in Ukraine. And this incredible informational war that was led, waged against Ukraine, it probably started maybe at least 2 years ago. And
let me go back to the people for a second. As information has come out about the fighting, as information has come out about the political process and how it works in the country, and as interestingly as the protest has shifted from the capital to the fighting in the outskirts. What do you sense from the people you talk to? I mean, what is the prevailing feeling among Ukrainians? Are they afraid? Are they hopeful for what the future holds? What sense do you get about how the population feels in general?
How I feel it, I think that many people, most people are hopeful. They may be a little bit tired of all that is going on and they want some... more tangible changes coming sooner than they than we have right now, especially because that the resources are drawn to this basically war with Russia. Even nobody calls this war. However, I think that the feelings in the East also changed. Why I started talking about informational war that Russia started several years ago is because for several years already they were calling Ukrainians fascists for some reason, and they wouldn't give any explanation why. They would just say, oh, they're fascists, or they do something wrong. And so it was lots of negative attitude towards Ukrainians that was raised in this eastern area. So all that was preparing... And the population who lives in eastern parts of Ukraine, that somehow they would be better with Russia, that there are higher pensions for older people there, and that they should break away from Ukraine. And that was a very strong campaign on Russian TV, which is popular in this area, and comes together with some kind of Russian soap opera and some other things, but basically they... there is a strong, this strong informational war that was led by Russia. And we should understand one thing. You know, in some cases, it's hard to believe that in 21st century, people who call themselves journalists or reporters may lie so openly, so be far from the truth. But we don't realize that in countries...
Are you talking about Russian and Ukrainian journalists?
I'm talking about Russian TV channels and Russian radio, things like that.
Are these on? Are you talking about state-controlled radio and TV?
That's my point, yeah, that in Ukraine, is it good or bad, but in we are in some way closer to Western values by having different owned media. So there would be different stations that would be saying, showing one side of the story and then the other side of the story. While in Russia, all this media are under they are completely controlled by Russian government. Those few that appear and try to say something different, for example, there was a TV channel Dozhd, which means rain in Russian. As soon as they started saying something slightly different than the main media, they were about to be closed because there were different governmental tax companies and something else like that coming after them, pretending to do just checkups and so on, but basically trying to close the station that would have that was brave enough to say something different than other channels would. So that's how they basically teach other channels just not to go too far from this main.
So let me ask, in that media landscape where you've got some independent journalists, and there are a lot of Western journalists now who are in Ukraine trying to cover this, and you've got state-controlled media from Russia, how does the average Ukrainian, for instance, the people you were talking to in Kiev who aren't on the battlefront, how does the average Ukrainian parse what is the truth and how do they get their information? And do they have to find multiple different sources to try to understand what's going on the border with Russia?
I think that's how Ukrainians do. Yeah, they look for different sources. And of course, there are some people who would trust some sources more than other sources, but still they have a choice. And people who were in eastern Ukraine, they didn't have much choice because it was they were basically bombarded by this 24/7 Russian TV channels who would be just saying untruthful things and trying to portray the protests, for example, in Kyiv as just fascists coming or something like that, just trying to scare people. And they would go as far as saying completely absurd things. Like, for example, they will come and eat your babies, they would say. And the funny thing that there would be people in eastern Ukraine who believed that.
So let me ask, is the average Ukrainian confused? Are Ukrainians, by and large, being given such conflicting information that they are not fully understanding what's going on in their country?
No, I think that Russians are confused. I think Ukrainians, because they have a choice even just to step out of their houses and turn off their TVs and just see what's going on. So in many cases, in most cases, they are not confused. They can get their information from different sources. They can get information from internet. They can get information from, again, media are not controlled by the government in Ukraine, so they can get different sources of information. So that's why I don't think that Ukrainians are either not confused or less confused. Of course, they might be confused to some degree because you have to kind of sift through that information or whatever is coming. But what I was trying to come to the idea that at the beginning of the conflict with Russia, and Russia was sending their army people who still serve in army, and as well as they were just hiring more people who would Russian government would pay them money to go to Ukraine to kind of stir some havoc there, and they would hire also some people in Ukraine, in the eastern part of Ukraine, either those who were really confused by that propaganda or people in some cases who were cons or just people who were without jobs. Because the areas we are talking about are miners' cities and mines, coal mines, probably, or those cities experience some difficulties all around the world because of different policies that are introduced in many countries.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, of course, President Yanukovych left, and now President Poroshenko is trying to take some sort of control, although it's hard to see him as in control at this point because of what's going on the border. How do people view him? I mean, this is a guy who came in and almost immediately had to deal with a Russian incursion in Crimea, and he's clearly not nearly as powerful as Vladimir Putin in that region. And he's going up against a country that's much larger, has many more resources, a much larger army. Is it possible at this point to have realistic faith in the leaders in Ukraine to try to get out of this somehow without having some sort of Western intervention?
Well, at least we have a hope for that. And I think Ukrainians just believe that we are protecting our own land rather than trying to get somebody else's land. So from this point of view, and again, the values that we are trying to protect are freedom, independence, kind of values that we can share easily with Western Europe and America. Is it hard? Yeah, probably standing against such an adversary as Russia today is. Do we need some help from other countries or at least support, starting with moral support and maybe something more than that? Of course we do. The problem in that is if we don't get this support and if we fail, I don't think Russia will stop just in Ukraine. It just would move forward. It, as someone said, the Russia would go as far as we, meaning the West, will let them.
Of course, we've had world wars started in exactly this fashion, and you know, you don't ever want to think about that. But being as from the point of view now of someone who has gone and come back and someone who lives in the United States, what's your opinion of how the United States government and other Western powers, Britain especially and others, are giving either support to this or are staying away from this and trying to keep Russia at arm's length? I mean, what do you see based on what you're learning living here?
Well, on one hand, being an American citizen, I see, and I know that many of my friends of Ukrainian descent also try to do that, contact senators and government to do something about that help. And I think that they are trying to do something on one hand. On the other hand, when I hear calls to help from Ukrainians, from my friends in Ukraine, of course, they want more tangible help. And especially, I think, from the Western Europe, I mean, that sometimes it feels that the United States actually at least try to do something. And the Western Europe, they sometimes say that, yeah, we agree that Russia is doing wrong things, and they kind of like want to go there. But then as they remember that they have business with Russia, they think, oh, no, we don't want to lose these contracts or something like that. And they don't understand that if the war starts on a bigger scale and if Russia moves forward, they're going to lose not only that business but much more. So, for example, we know about French trying to sell warships to Russia. I think they're called Mistrals. they wouldn't go on sanctions. I don't know, though, yesterday I think they were trying to do something. But I know that many countries, they would start discussing the necessity of the sanctions. And sanctions are just economic sanctions on Russia. And still they would start thinking, how much are we going to lose on that? And they don't realize that if they don't do that, it's not just wouldn't be only bad for Ukraine, but it would be bad for their countries later as well.
Let me finish by asking another question about your family. Mm-hmm. As you prepare to have a grandchild who's being born, and you think about your son and your daughter-in-law going forward in Ukraine, does the way you think about their life and the kind of life they're going to lead change, whether you think about whether the country is under President Poroshenko's control or President Putin's control? I mean, does your view of how your family's life is going to be change?
The idea of Putin ruling over Ukraine is absolutely unacceptable to 99.9% of Ukrainians. So I think that I will express the feelings of all Ukrainians when I say that nobody wants Putin to rule over Ukraine. We don't know how well Poroshenko can do his job, but you know that what happens in democracies. You elect one person and then you may elect somebody else, and that's how democracy works. We are open to criticize Poroshenko or anybody else who comes to that position or any other position like a prime minister and so on. I would like Ukraine to be free and independent and just a good country to live in, so my son and my daughter-in-law can happily live there and raise their children there and come and visit me here.
It sounds like the Ukraine that you grew up in and that you remember is different now and may stand to be different for some time than the Ukraine in which your grandchildren will grow up.
Yes, and that's why I kind of didn't finish the idea with these people who live in the eastern Ukraine and who are involved in this conflict and saw the bombings of Russian rackets there and so on. And that even those who were brainwashed by Russian propaganda, now many of them, most of them actually change their feelings towards what's going on. They see that actually Russia just pushes this propaganda, but in fact they're doing something else, that they act as criminals, even though their army is present there. They're basically acting like criminals there on the border there.